This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bianculli, TV critic for the New York Daily News, sitting in for Terry Gross. Joe Henry is a singer-songwriter who has recorded a dozen albums of his own, but also is a sought-after record producer for albums recorded by other artists. One of those artists is Elvis Costello, and we'll hear from him later on today's show. Joe Henry's first album, Talk of Heaven, came out in 1986. 21 years later, he's just released his latest CD called Civilians. Here's the title track.
The carriage horses stamp and fume until our color's gone. They leave the street in black and white, bring the evening on. Lovers tug their way out of gloves, out of shoes, and gray chiffon. Driver pulls his blanket high, pretends to look beyond. Pray for you, pray for me, sing it like a song. Life is short, but by the grace of God, the night is long.
Joe Henry's recent credits as a record producer include CDs by Amy Mann, Betty LaVette, and Solomon Burke. Henry also teamed with Loudon Wainwright III to compose the music for this year's film comedy, Knocked Up. Terry spoke with Joe Henry last year about his collection I Believe to My Soul. It featured performances by Alan Toussaint, Irma Thomas, Billy Preston, Mavis Staples, and Ann Peebles.
The Ann Peebles song I want to play is not a song that you would associate with a soul singer. It's a country-flavored song written by Bob Dylan. Tonight I'll be staying here with you. How did you come up with this as a selection for her, or did she choose it herself?
You know, there's so much classic soul music from the 60s that has a lot in common with the great country music of the 60s as well. And I think the structure of the songs are, you know, wildly similar. And I don't know why it occurred to me that it was just such a beautiful song and it has such a melancholy spirit that I thought suited Anne. You know, and it was a while, I think when she went back and heard Bob's version, I don't think she heard it as a song for her to sing. But because I pushed her a bit and she's a very accommodating person, she sat down at the piano one day and kind of worked out an arrangement where it sounded like a song she could have written, you know, and I think she heard it once she sat down and started playing with it a little bit.
It's interesting that you kept your confidence even when she told you it was wrong for her.
I had to do that a lot, Terry. Not with her specifically, but, you know, all the artists that I worked with, I had ideas on their behalf, you know. I mean, I came out of the blue for most of these people. I don't think any of them had any idea who I was when I first got in touch. So, you know, I was, you know, having to adopt a posture of, you know, a certain amount of, you know, cheeky confidence, you know, just to start having a conversation. And I started having ideas on behalf of these artists as I started thinking about, you know, wanting to work with them.
Well, I think this sounds terrific. Let's hear Ann Peebles singing the Bob Dylan song, Tonight I'll Be Staying Here With You.
Throw my ticket out the window. Throw my suitcase out there too. Throw my troubles out the door. I don't need them anymore. 'Cause tonight I'll be staying.
Do you feel like you learn things about singing, working with these incredible soul singers?
Well, of course you do. I mean, and I think one thing that all these singers have in common that I worked with is none of them are the, you know, the flashy type of singer. I mean, many of them have incredible chops as singers, but that's not their orientation. I mean, there's a real understated quality to their songwriting, you know, those of them that are writers, and to their vocal delivery. And that's something that I'm really seduced by. I mean, I don't really care anything about, you know, vocal acrobatics. That just doesn't mean anything to me any more than, you know, someone playing guitar that way. It just goes right past me. But someone who is evocative in a very contained, very intimate way, I find that, you know, really compelling. And I think all these singers, you know, have that gift. So, you know, that's something that, you know, for myself, I'm always trying to do.
As a singer yourself, did you try to, like, measure your singing against theirs? Or did their singing affect you in any way? I mean, your style of singing is really different.
That's a polite way of putting it.
The self-singers.
My style of singing is my style of singing is very different. You know, I'm as a singer, I'm a character actor. You know, I'm like the Burt Young of you know, of singing compared to anybody I was in a room with. But yeah, of course, I hear them and I think about trying to find ways to be evocative on my own terms in the way that I think that they are evocative as singers. And that's probably the closest I can come to. Taking an inspiration from them directly as a singer myself.
You know, what you said is interesting about as a singer, you're a character actor. Because as a songwriter, you're a character writer. I mean, you're often writing in the voice of different characters as opposed to writing, you know, confessional, true first person kind of songs.
Oh, sure. I can't stand that, Terry.
Well, does the character writing come from feeling that you're a character actor as a singer? Like, which came first, that approach to writing or that approach to singing?
Well, I think when I started out, when I was a young, you know, I was 10 or 11, when I was listening to singers and songwriters that I found, you know, significant, and I still do, some of the same ones. I think even when I was 11 and I heard Randy Newman, I knew he wasn't writing about himself, and it never occurred to me that he should be. I thought a songwriter should have the same license that a filmmaker or a novelist has. And to that end, I've been just as influenced by great short story writers, as an example, as any other songwriters. I think it's really limiting to talk about songwriting only in terms of other songwriting.
In an article that you once wrote, you talked about the impact of hearing when you were young. Ray Charles singing the McCartney-Lennon song Yesterday and Lorne Greene singing Ringo. And you talked about how these songs really hit you in the gut because they were both about mortality, and that even though you were maybe six, you realized that. So I'm interested in hearing a little more about how lyrics spoke to you when you were young, particularly those kind of songs about mortality. I mean, I remember one or two songs like that in my own life that really scared me, but I was drawn to them because of that.
Well, same with me. When I heard Ray on the radio, and I can still remember it, I mean, it would have been 1967, I think, so I would have been six. And I lived in Atlanta at the time, and I was absolutely terrified by this laying in the dark of a room and hearing Ray sing that song. And I knew that he was talking about, you know, about his ultimate death one day. I mean, it really did terrify me, but I was completely enthralled by it. I mean, I find him, you know, probably the greatest, you know, singer of, you know, of my lifetime. Because I believe everything that comes out of his mouth, you know. I swear to God, when Ray was, you know, out there, you know, shilling for Pepsi, you know, I still thought it was pretty funky, and I didn't really have a problem with it.
Now, I want to play another track that you recorded, and this is for an album that you produced by the singer Solomon Burke. And he's a great soul singer who was probably best known in the 60s. This was an assignment. You were asked to produce him, but once you were given that assignment, what was your approach to working with him, and how did you try to work with him in choosing material?
Well, the first idea working with Solomon was, again, like, not to make a record he'd ever made before. So, you know, I had an idea to make a record that was for him, very stripped down and pretty rootsy, you know, kind of folksy in its nature, you know. But, you know, I told him at the time that, you know, I wanted him to be a, you know, a band leader as a singer, you know, like Sinatra was. I said, we're gonna find some songs for you to sing, and we're gonna put a band together that knows how to follow you, you know, emotionally wherever you go with the songs. That's what the arrangements will feel like, and it was all new to him to go into a studio with a band who didn't have arrangements written for them. You know, when he was making records with Jerry Wexler at Atlantic in the 60s, I think he came in and there was a band sitting there with charts, and they would run through it a couple of times, and once they'd read the charts pretty well and he'd gotten a good vocal take, they went on to the next song. But the idea of kind of discovering the character of a song with tape rolling, which is the only way I know how to work, really, he'd never made a record like that before. But he had, you know, he'd bought into the idea, or at least he'd embraced the idea that he was going to let me work the way I wanted to work, whether, you know, it made any sense to him or not. So I tried to find songs that I just thought he could embody. And I always take the coward's way out and, you know, hire only great musicians, because, you know, if you get people who know how to listen, you know, who are song-oriented in a room, it's not hard. It's really not hard to come up with something that's musical.
Please don't give up on me. Oh, please don't give up on me. I know it's late. Late in the game. But my feelings, my true feelings, haven't changed. Here in my heart, I know I was wrong, 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 wrong. I'd like to make amends for the love that I never, ever, ever, ever shown. Just don't give up on me. Every word is true. I'll give you my everything, all of my love, all of my love, all of my love, 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 love to you. Just don't give up on me.
Play a song that you wrote, and we're going to hear it two different ways. You wrote it, we'll hear your version, and then we're going to hear the version Madonna recorded of the same song. And I want to play this back to back because I think it's so instructive about the flexibility of a song to hear her version and your version. You do it completely differently, and if you weren't listening carefully to the lyrics, you might not even know it was the same song.
Well, that's happened many times. You know, I've got good friends who knew both versions of the song, and it never occurred to them that it was the same words going by. You know, it's been a really good lesson for me as a songwriter because I'm very lyric oriented. But I realized, you know, when that song kind of happened for her, I mean, she had a big hit with it, that, you know, it really doesn't matter what you're saying, you know, if the groove is convincing. You know, I don't know why it took me, you know, to be 40 years of age, you know, whatever I was when it came out, it took me that long to finally figure out that, you know, the groove was everything, you know.
Well, your version is a tango, and hers is more of a groove.
That's right. And I thought, you know, I thought tango is what the kids wanted, you know.
Oh, and how right you were.
Yeah. Still have my finger on the pulse of the of
young America.
Young people.
Yes. So talk a little bit about writing the song, you know, lyrically and musically, and then we'll hear it.
Oh, you know, it's always the way. I thought the song was a complete throwaway, you know. I had just moved and set up a new studio at the guest house at my home, and was looking to just record anything, just to see if all my things were working. And I needed something to record. So I wrote that song in about 25 minutes or something, just to give myself something to do. And I was kind of embarrassed by it, to be honest. I thought it was a little bit, it starts off a little bit Spoon in June, you know. It kind of takes a cryptic turn there towards the end. But, you know, I just thought it was, you know, a trifle. In the right hands, clearly, you know, a trifle has turned into some very handsome shoes that I'm wearing right now. I wish you could see them.
Well, I like your version a lot. So let's hear your version and Madonna's version back to back. And this is the Joe Henry song, Stop.
Tell the bed not to lay like the mouth of a grave, not to stare up at me like a calf on its knees. Tell me love isn't true, it's just something we do. Tell me everything I'm not,
Madonna back-to-back with Joe Henry, performing Joe Henry's song, Stop. Now, people might be wondering, how did Madonna get a hold of Joe Henry's song? And there's an interesting story behind that that starts with the fact that she's your sister-in-law.
That's pretty much the whole story. Yeah, she is. I mean, I've known her since I was 15, and she was 17. We went to high school together.
Were you dating your wife when you were that young?
No, I was not. My wife would have been about 14 or something at the time. 13. I didn't know her yet. But I became close with that whole family. There's a big kind of sprawling family. We were all living north of Detroit. And I became very close with my wife a few years down the road. And, here we are.
So from what I've read, it was her idea to send your song to her sister. You were reluctant to do it.
I was very reluctant. I mean, that's just a line I don't cross. I mean, or I hadn't crossed. I mean, I have a very good relationship with my sister-in-law, and I attribute that at least in part to the fact that, you know, I don't need anything from her, and, you know, she always returns my phone calls because I'm not trying to pitch anything to her. So I wrote the song and played it for my wife, and she said, I think you should send it to Madonna. You know, she's making a new record. I think she could sing this. It'd be great. I said, you know, if I was going to pitch something, it wouldn't be this. You know, I maybe could come up with something, but it wouldn't be this. So she said, well, make me a copy and I'll send it to her. So she did, and I heard from my sister-in-law about 36 hours later, and she said, what are you going to do with this? And I said, that's just another song on the pile, you know? And, you know, she had her way with it. And, I think it's fantastic.
So what was the experience like of having a hit record on a Madonna album? I mean, the whole sense of like royalties from songwriting, was that something really new to you, having a hit with somebody else's version of your song?
I know what you're trying to say, Terry. I know what you're trying to say. It was new to me, of course. It had been a complete abstraction to me to see back end on anything, you know?
Mm-hmm.
you know, I'd never gotten a significant royalty check in my life. You know, I live from, you know, record or publishing advances, but it was a complete abstraction to think about myself being recouped with my publisher and getting, you know, big checks in the mail. But I found I'm very adaptable. I got used to that very quickly.
Joe Henry, speaking to Terry Gross last year. His new CD as a singer-songwriter, Civilians, has just been released.